following program is intended for mature audiences.
They used to bounce messages across the earth.
Shows. Everyone in the old world had a show.
Do you think there's still somebody out there? Sending shows?
Who knows? Those are the planes of silence.
Savino Veritas, live from Burbank, California.
Welcome, everyone. Tom Savino here with Savino Veritas from Burbank, California. The madness continues. Trump is still in office. How much longer will he be? Let's figure it out.
Has been studying political messaging and how people digest political messages and language of public discourse. He's an author and professor emeritus of cognitive science and linguistics at UC Berkeley. He joins us now to talk about how failing to understand unconscious thought and moral worldviews has frustrated Democrats and progressives as they try to counter the Trump message with basic logic. Professor Lakoff, welcome to Savino Veritas.
A pleasure to be here.
Linguistically, size up Donald Trump.
Well, it's not just linguistically, it's mentally. He knows how not just to speak, but how to change your brain and to affect your brain very, very effectively. He's a super salesman, and he's very, very good at it. And you need to know a little bit about your brain, which is ideas don't float in the air. They're in your neural circuitry. And if you have a worldview, your understanding of the world in general, then that's a lot of neural circuits. Those neural circuits for a worldview are fixed. Once they're fixed, they become what you might call a neural filter. You can only understand what your brain allows you to understand. So if you have only one worldview, you're stuck to understand things that fit that worldview. And if information comes in that doesn't fit it, it'll be either not noticed, ignored, ridiculed, or attacked.
People choose their worldview, do they not, Professor?
Not necessarily. Very often they're brought up with it. I suspect that Donald Trump was brought up with the worldview.
But certainly he could expand his worldview if he wanted to, yes, Professor?
I don't think so. No, this is not something that you just consciously will. Remember, about 98% of thought is unconscious. Now, many people, probably most, have more than one worldview at once. What is a moderate? A moderate is somebody who has mostly one. If you're a moderate conservative, you have some progressive views on various different things. If you're a moderate progressive, you have some conservative view on views on different things. And that means you have two different worldviews, but about different things. And neurally, that means those two worldviews contradict each other, and the activation of one weakens the other. So if you can use language to activate your worldview in somebody else, you have power.
So tell me then how Trump connects his worldview with his linguistics, with his words.
First, repetition. Over and over and over. The language means something. It activates what's called a frame in your brain, which is part of a worldview. A good example, when George Bush first came into office, the first day he talked about tax relief, which says that taxation is an affliction, and the good guys try to get rid of that affliction. The bad guys want to keep it there. And then every day after that, he repeated it until the New York Times started using tax relief on its front page, and the Democrats took tax relief for the middle class and so on, taking the conservative understanding of taxation. And this happens a lot. Take regulation. Trump says he wants to get rid of regulation. What does that mean? From the corporate point of view, a regulation is something that imposes on your freedom, is a burden, and it's costly. But from the point of view of the public, regulations are there to protect you. that protect you against unscrupulous corporations in all kinds of ways. And what's happening right now is that the Republicans in Congress are getting rid of regulations in the Food and Drug Administration, for example, regulations on proving that drugs are effective and that they work. 90% of the test usually shows that most drugs don't work. So if you get rid of those, you get 90% of the drugs out there that are supposed to be healing you, not healing you. They get rid of environmental regulations on clean water, clean air, and things like that, and so on. You get rid of regulations in the SEC. What does that mean? It means fraud is made okay. What happens is, behind the scenes, regulations are getting rid of, but they're not called protections. If you said, look, Trump has said he's going to get rid of 75% of the government protections in the following areas, food and drug, clean water, clean air. How do you feel about being poisoned, right? Very different understanding.
Are our minds so weak, Professor, that when we hear Trump say the same things over and over again, that we have no ability to resist that?
You have to resist it all the time, but most people don't. So it'll happen over and over. People, he would say, crooked Hillary, until people thought that she was crooked about something when she wasn't. You get the idea of the crooked press, the press that is lying to you, lying press, until people get it as fake news, and most of the population has no choice but about that. Most of the population can't consciously resist all the time.
Why?
Because that's how brains work. If you have language that activates an idea which is physically there in your brain, every time it's activated, it gets stronger.
So are you saying that even though we have a fundamental sense of what's right and wrong, hearing a lie over and over again can actually change our moral compass?
I don't know about you personally. With a lot of people, the lying doesn't matter. And let me tell you why. Think of it this way. All politics is about morality. It's about right and wrong. If a politician says, do what I say, it's because it's right, not because it's wrong. They don't say, do it because it's evil. So, all right, that means your notion of what's right for you is what's important here. Now, your very identity is defined by what's right for you. You want to think of yourself as doing right all the time. That is the deepest part of your identity. It is the highest truth for you. Now, if you have what I'll call strict father morality, which is what Trump has and what the Republicans mainly have, what that says is that that view of the world, which is a view having to do with domination, that view of the world defines who you are, and it's the higher truth. So if something comes in and it doesn't fit that, and you happen to know it's a lie, it doesn't matter, because the higher truth that defines your very identity is more important.
Really shocking. You completely undermine my whole belief system. Are our minds so easily manipulated?
Some people's minds are, but most people are not consciously looking for what is going on opposing them. And most people don't think about other people's worldview. One of the things about being a progressive is that you care about other people, and empathize with other people, and you want to know the truth. And if you want to know the truth, you worry about what other people are thinking and whether something is true or not. But if the issue is something very different, if you think of a family life as being a matter of father knows best, he has authority over you and physical authority, he's supposed to have tough love. If his children don't obey him, where he tells them what's right, then they should be punished. They have to be punished. It's his duty to punish them until they, try to avoid the punishment, do what he says, and then if they do that and don't do what just feels good, then they can go out in the world and be prosperous. Well, there's a logic there. If you are not prosperous, then that means you don't have discipline, which means you can't be moral and you deserve your poverty. And that's the view that people who are poor are lazy. Now, that's a very common view in strict father thought. But there's more to it than that. Because in that, there's a view about the world in general. It says this view of the world, the strict father view of the world, is the natural view. If it's natural, if it's the way the world actually functions, there is a hierarchy. It says that the people who have won out are the people who are the best people. And that gives you a hierarchy of who's better than who. So religions have won out, God above man. We're conquering nature, man above nature. Nurture is there for us to get whatever we can. The strong above the weak. You know, you have to have a strong country, etc., if you're going to beat out other countries. The rich above the poor, well, they're disciplined, they deserve it. Employers above employees, well, they're rich enough to be employers. You have Western culture above non-Western culture. Adults above children. In 21 states, teachers and coaches can beat children with sticks if they don't just show them respect all the time. You have America above other countries. America first, because we're better. You have men above women, whites above non-whites, Christians above non-Christians, straights above gays. That is that moral hierarchy, because it says who has won out. Now, that moral hierarchy defines virtually all radical Republican positions on every issue. It's one issue. It's not whether someone is homophobic or not whether someone is a racist or a sexist or, Islamophobic. It's all of them together. They fit together seamlessly. That is what is behind the kind of America and the Americans who voted for Trump. And it's a very powerful kind of thing.
It sounds as if we have to take on the characteristics of the enemy in order to defeat the enemy. And we don't want to be that way. Do we have to be that kind of mean-spirited and caustic kind of people?
First of all, it's important to understand that there are different kinds of conservatives. There are some who are moderate, that is, who happen to have some progressive views on something or other. There are some who have what I'll call in-group nurturance, in-group care, who care about their families or their neighbors, in their members of their church, in the army, the members of their platoon. They care about certain people, and it could be their community, their neighbors, a larger community. Now, so these are, it's important to see this, and I've experienced, I grew up around such folks. When it comes to, if you're being in your in-group, they take care of you. If there's a forest fire, they're out there manning, the hoses. There's a flood, they're swinging the sandbags. They may have political views that are very different, but when it comes to care in their community and care for their neighbors, they're right there, and that's real care. And that is where you can discuss things with them and appreciate who they are. So when I was teaching this stuff, students would come to me and say, Thanksgiving is coming. I'm going to encounter my grandfather. We're going to have that grand fight again. I hate it. I can't stand the very idea of it. And I say, don't fight with your grandfather. Your grandfather loves you. Tell you what, ask your grandfather one question. What is he most proud of that he's done for other people without consideration for himself? Ask that question. 100% of the time, people will come back and say, my grandfather has done 3 really terrific things. I disagree with him on other things, but I have to say he's done some really good things for some people. And I say, only talk to him about those things and keep talking to him about what it means for him. Because what that does is activate care and nurturance in his brain.
That's all well and good, Professor, with my grandfather and my sister, who's turned into a Tea Party person, or a neighbor. But what about these politicians who have an agenda and they're trying to ram down their philosophies down our throats?
They are not interested in finding common ground. So there are many things you have to do depending on who you are. I'm involved in starting a citizens communication network to get people to think and say, to talk, say, protection instead of, regulation. Don't say regulation. Say these are protections. There are hundreds of things like that. Always shift the viewpoint to the public. For example, public resources that go through the government are necessary for private enterprise and public life and private life. You cannot have a business if you don't have roads and bridges and airports and sewers, if you don't have things that are given to you, like science and technology, in computer science and satellite technology and GPS systems and cell phones. These are supported by our government and by your taxpayers, and they're given to you. Buy that. You don't have medical technology and new drugs because the NIH has done it unless you have public resources. What the conservatives are trying to do is get rid of public resources. That is what is happening every day in Congress, getting rid of public resources and public protections. Absolutely crucial, and it's being hidden because people are criticizing Donald Trump. Now, what Donald Trump is doing is making a front for that. And criticizing Donald Trump directly is like saying, don't think of an elephant, or Nixon saying, I am not a crook. You negate something, and it makes people think of it. It strengthens the people you're arguing against. What you need to do is argue for. Always frame things from your point of view when you start. So suppose you're in the press and you have to cover Trump. You're in the media. What do you do? And I've been in the program on the media. And that's what I say. I said, look, first of all, is he going to try to divert attention for someone? Start with the real issues confronting the country and confronting him first. And tell the truth about those. Then, when you see a diversion, like is he talking about Meryl Streep this week, tell the truth about that diversion first. Then say, oh, by the way, he's tweeted the following, which doesn't fit the facts in this way. You say that in 30 seconds, and then you go back to the real issues. And this is a diversion. It's away from these real issues, and then you go back to telling the truth.
There's one big problem with that in regard to the media, and we depend on the media, but the media also depends on Donald Trump. The media has created Donald Trump. The media knows Donald Trump sells, and sometimes they don't get to the truth about that, what they need to really ask.
This is absolutely right. When I talked to the graduate students in journalism at UC Berkeley last March, I talked to them about just these things, and what they said was the head of CBS, the president of CBS, says it may be bad for the country, but having Trump on every day is good for the profits of CBS. Those graduate students said, why am I here in graduate school? I want to be an investigative reporter. Do I want to have to work for that? You don't have to work for that. You can be telling truths all the time, saying things from the point of view of the public, not from the point of view of conservatism, but you have to find a niche where you can do it. You have to find a way to do it, and ultimately, the people in the press have to get the courage to stand up to it.
Yeah, but how does the press find its spine?
That's a good question. It finds its spine because otherwise it will be useless. Otherwise, all they will be is spokespeople for Trump. That's all they're going to be. You know, okay, Kellyanne, tell me what I should say today. Okay, Kellyanne, I'll just say it. Yes. You know, and when they know it's false, well, why are they in the business? What is your job if you're a reporter? If you're in the media, your job is to tell the truth for the public good, period. That is why you're there. And if you're not there doing that, you shouldn't be there.
To what extent are we living in an age where truth doesn't even matter? And my truth is my truth and your truth is your truth. Maybe all of this makes no difference.
Well, we're partly there. And the reason we're partly there is what I call the neural filter. That is, if you hear some information that comes in and it doesn't fit what your brain can understand or comprehend, you're going to either change it or ignore it or attack it. One of those things. And in fact, I mean, lots of experiments show this. If you go into neuroscience, it's well known. That's what's going to happen. This is as a neural filter. Now, if you have both worldviews, the question is, can you say things that fit one worldview and fit the other worldview, fit the minor worldview, even if you're mostly a conservative? That is something that's hard to do, but you have to understand that and study it. So it's difficult to do. And with some people, if they are totally conservative, you have no choice. They're going to go and hear and believe what Trump says, no matter what you say. Now, there are questions where they have mostly in-group nurturance and care about their families, about other people, and so on, and their neighbors. In those areas, there's a chance to actually get them to think differently.
We've been talking mostly about the head and thinking, but what about the heart? What about the heart? Is there any link between the head and the heart?
Yeah, they're intimate. and it's not the heart is a metaphor for the rest of the body. All of your emotions come through your body. Every emotion, you know, is there in your body. You know, we first discovered this back in the 80s when we started looking at the metaphors used for anger. And I went to the person who studies the psychology of anger, how it works in your body, what the physiology is. When you're angry, your skin temperature goes up half a degree. That's why you're boiling mad. Your blood pressure goes up and your heartbeat rate goes up. So that's why you explode. You have interference with accurate perception. That's why you're blind with rage. You have interference with fine motor control, which is why you get hopping mad. If you go through the actual language of anger to describe anger, there's a logic to it, but it comes from the body. And Antonio Damasio, a great neuroscientist, has pointed out that all of those things in the body are registered in the brain. The brain and body aren't separate. And they're linked to what you believe. They're not connected, they're not disconnected from your beliefs. Your beliefs and your worldview are not just intellectual. They're embodied. Thought is embodied. It's there emotionally. And that is crucial. One of the things that you need to do is to get involved in the way people's bodies work. You know, you can see by looking at Trump what his body is doing. I mean, it's quite something. It's very often you can see somebody up there and you can tell what they're like. You see from Trump somebody who is aggressive, who is, trying to dominate you, who is, trying to put you down and trying to be above you in all ways and so on. You see it actually physically in his face, in his mouth, in his hands, in his hand gestures, all the time.
Well, if he's going to have that kind of demeanor for 4 years, how do we sustain our hope?
Language matters. It's not just, and actions matter. Certain kinds of actions matter. Why was the Women's March what it was? Why did it have to be women? Because it was about care. The criticism was each of those women had a different view, a different issue, etc. No. They all had one issue, care. And the point of a progressive democratic government is it's not just about elections. It's about citizens caring for other citizens working through that government for that care. Without care, there's no democracy.
Professor George Lakoff from UC Berkeley, thank you so much for being a part of Sabino Veritas.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards, with a V for victory.
Professor Lakoff mentioned CBS President Leslie Moonves and some of the media students at UC Berkeley criticized Mr. Moonves for his capitalistic views and choosing to air Donald Trump because the people like it. It's a lot of ratings, and that's good. But in his defense, Mr. Moonves also is very supportive of satire. Satire. This is Sabino Veritas, where satire, Veritas is satire spelled backwards with a V for victory, and that is certainly true for the master of satire on CBS, late night every night, Stephen Colbert.
Just a quick word to Donald Trump about his plan to melt the Arctic. Are you doing this stuff for Russia, too? Because I don't know what's going on between you and Russia, sir. Okay, and I don't think anyone else knows either. Partly because it's really complicated, this, you know, kind of intrigue. You know, did you call somebody? Did anybody call you? Did they hack for you? Partly because it's complicated. Probably because you're really boring spies. So I'm going to liven it up right now by explaining the situation with more exciting spies, the Tom Clancy novels. You see, the commander-in-chief is reaching the breaking point because Trump's administration is under fire for a possible call to treason, putting us in clear and present danger without remorse, which is why I'm experiencing the sum of all fears.
I like that.
That's the first circus act of the evening. The latest damning revelation is about Trump's son-in-law and National Dimple Reserve, Jared Kushner. We already knew he met with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak, but yesterday the White House acknowledged a previously undisclosed meeting between Kushner and the chief of Russia's government-owned Vnesche Konombank. If you can pronounce that correctly, the FBI would like to talk to you. Because Americans can't do business with this bank, okay? We're not supposed to actually do any business with the Vnesnekarzhna Bank because it has a very close relationship with Vladimir Putin. In fact, it's so close that if you open up a checking account for $100 or more, you get a free toaster and a dead journalist. And I wouldn't recommend it. I'm not recommending it. I'm just saying it's free. It's hard to say no. And it looks like the pressure of these Russian rumors are getting to the administration. Case in point, is this today? Today, Sean Spicer at the Spicy Time.
I've said it from the day that I got here until whatever, that there is no connection. You've got Russia. If the president puts Russian salad dressing on his salad tonight, somehow that's a Russian connection.
Wait a second. The president put Russian dressing on his salad tonight? Whoa. That's huge news. Trump ate a salad? I've never seen that. There's no evidence of that. Where's the evidence? I see no evidence that the only time he ever eats green is when he eats $100 bills in front of Mark Cuban. And Russia rumors must be getting to Trump, too. Because last night he tweeted, "Why isn't the House Intelligence Committee looking into the Bill and Hillary deal that allowed big uranium to go to Russia? Russian speech, money to Bill, the Hillary-Russian reset, praise of Russia by Hillary, or Podesta Russian company, Trump-Russia story is a hoax. Hashtag MAGA." Yeah. Why isn't somebody investigating any of that? Why isn't somebody investigating all that? Because, remember, Trump knows that if Congress finds something on Hillary, she might have to resign from not being president. And check out the timing on those two tweets. Okay, he sent the first one at 9:26 last night. And then he completed the sentence 9 minutes later. Okay, that second tweet was 23 words. That means he types 2.5 words a minute. He's got really slow thumbs or a very talented penis. Obviously, those letters are really small. You want something tiny to be able to type it out with. Fun. But what's the truth? Was there nefarious collusion between the Trump campaign and Russia? Or is this all just being blown out of proportion by the liberal media over at the New York Times and the FBI? Who knows? I don't know.
Who knows?
Maybe we'll find out from the House Intelligence Committee, led by Intel chairman and car salesman who really needs you to help him out here. Devin Nunes. Okay, but Nunes, this guy may not be the guy to investigate Russia and the Trump campaign because Nunes advised the Trump campaign and was on Trump's transition team. That's like saying to Luke Skywalker, "We got a great new advisor for the Rebel Alliance. His name is Darth. Darth, come on in here for a second. Darth knows all about the Death Star. Now, is there some kind of hole about the size of a womp rat we could fire in here? He's your dad, by the way. We'll get into that later. But I can't tell if we're going to learn anything from Nunes. He doesn't seem all that focused on Russia because he spent a lot of time trying to validate Trump accusing Obama of wiretapping him a couple weeks ago. And just last week, Nunes held a surprise news conference.
I recently confirmed that on numerous occasions, the intelligence community incidentally collected information about U.S. citizens involved in the Trump transition.
So intelligence agencies did collect info on the Trump team, but it was incidental when they were listening to foreign agents that the Trump team was talking to. But Nunes says this information has nothing to do with Russia, but we have to take his word for it because he won't show it to anybody or reveal his source ever, not even to members of his own committee. The only person he has briefed on the subject is Donald Trump. Oh, that is brilliant detective work. You gather all the evidence you can on the prime suspect, and then you share it with him. It's all part of CBS's new show, CSI Washington, No Investigation. I don't know.
Yes, I
don't really understand.
Yeah, I don't
understand this cat. He's a slow talker. He talks really slowly.
Yeah,
and I don't know whether that's from an abundance of caution because he's on the Intelligence Committee or because he just doesn't know what to say. I'm starting to think we should not mistake his long pauses for thought.
Wow.
Then yesterday, there was new Nunes news. Because it turns out the information he gave to Donald Trump, he got from meeting with an intelligence source on the White House grounds. So he went to the White House to tell Trump what he had learned from the White House. But Nunes insists there's nothing sinister about any of these trips to the White House grounds.
And look, if I really wanted to, I could have snuck onto the grounds late at night and probably nobody would have seen me.
Boo! I'm Devin Nunes, congressional ninja. How do you do that? How do you sneak onto the White House grounds? Is that really something we should be telling people you can do? Is that a secret he just gave away? Or is it just that it's very hard to see you sneak onto the White House grounds when the Secret Service is kneeling on your neck? So this leaves the question of what Nunes found out and who leaked it to him. And to get to the bottom of that, we're going to need the Late Show's Figure It Out-a-tron. Bring it out, boys. Bring it out, the Figure It Out-a-tron. Here we go. Yeah, it's good right there. Okay. You guys know the Figure It Out-a-tron. Figure It Out-a-tron is the highest technology available here at the Late Show. Here's how it works. It works off photonic energy. When light hits it, it reflects off and goes into your eyes. That's how it works. Now, as you can see on the Figure It Out-a-tron, here at the center, we have a photorealistic portrait of Devin Nunes, okay? Now, Congressman Nunes can't reveal what he learned because he's got split loyalties, okay? On this hand, okay, he is on the Intel committee, all right? But on the other hand, he was on Trump's transition team. And down here, he's splitting his focus between investigating the Trump tweets accusing Obama of wiretapping, but also leading the investigation into Russia colluding with the Trump team, okay? Meanwhile, he is going to the White House to tell Trump what he's learned from the White House. He's at the White House a lot. I will indicate the White House by this W right here. He is up in the White House. He's so far up in the White House, you can't even see his head. Okay, obviously, he's there talking to Trump. He's there talking to Trump and Trump's associates. He's talking to Trump's associates. Associates. I'm writing Osiates really small because I don't want to waste chalk here. And he is so far up here talking up into Trump's associates that he can't tell us. I'm just saying, he's really in Trump's inner circle. And no matter where this investigation leads, no matter what we find out, one thing is true. Nunes is not coming out of this smelling like a rose. We got a great show for you tonight. Hank Azaria is here. Stick around.
So here's a good question maybe from one of our commenters that speaks to just this. Cameron McDonald writes, because I think this is a popular Democratic assumption, right? She said, do you believe the popular Democratic assumption that America's changing demographics will guarantee their party's domination by the mid-21st century, yeah. right? Because this
well,
is the standard
narrative. Well, it's not only the standard narrative. That's where that's where Listen Liberals started.
Yeah.
So, well, I mean, it has a bunch of starting points. It picks up from where What's the Matter with Kansas left off. It repeats a lot of the stuff that was in the Baffler back in the 90s. Yeah. But it started when I was at a dinner party in Washington, and I was talking to a highly connected Democrat, let's say. Mm-hmm. And he was explaining to me the theory of the coalition of the ascendant, which is that Democrats will win every presidential election from here on because of demographics.
Yeah.
And what this has led to, and it's, hey, fair enough, I can read the census data as well as anybody else. They've got a point. The problem with this is that it breeds complacency. Because it makes them think everybody votes as their demographics dictate. Okay, we are all pawns. We are all puppets of demographic data.
Yeah.
Okay, and so the Democratic candidate doesn't have to do anything. They don't have to deliver anything. They don't have to do anything differently because they know for sure that we're going to vote for them because of demographic data. And it leads to something like Hillary, which is this campaign of utter, complacency on stilts.
Yeah,
you know where, but. Worse, it takes Republican, quiescence for granted. The idea that Republicans aren't going to do anything about this. They're just going to go down with the Titanic,
yeah.
right? With the sinking white male Titanic or whatever yeah. it is. And, I got news for you. Republicans aren't interested in dying.
Yeah.
You know, these are some very smart people working in the Republican Party, very dynamic people. They like to win.
Yeah.
And, they're out there trying all these different things. And this is where this gets really, really interesting. Trump found a way to beat that argument, okay? Trump has found a way to defeat the coalition of the ascendant. And here's where the Democratic complacency gets really bad, because they're all sitting around in Washington now saying, well, Trump is going to self-destruct. All we have to do is wait for him to screw up, and then we'll step in, and it'll be status quo ante. We'll, everything will be fine. No worries.
Yeah.
Right? Look, Trump may screw up. Trump may get impeached. Trump is a fool.
Yeah.
Trumpism is here to stay. Okay? This idea of populist nationalism. Yeah. And Trump, by the way, is a terrible politician.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, an idiot. Like, the idea of running for president and, like, making fun of all these American ethnic groups. It's like, what the hell is this guy thinking? But think about Trumpism in the hands of a real politician, a Marco Rubio, a Ted Cruz, a member of the Bush family. Mm-hmm. Okay? That's going to be hard to stop. And the Democrats better be thinking of how you take that ideology on. The Republicans have found something new here.
Yeah.
They better be. Instead, they're just sitting around saying, well, demographics will deliver it to us eventually. All we have to do is sit and wait. It's the stupidest strategy.
Yeah.
Utterly complacent.
He lasted only a few months as Donald Trump's unpaid campaign manager, but Paul Manafort is still very much in the news for his ties to a Russian oligarch and a Ukrainian strongman. As WNYC's Andrea Bernstein and Ilya Marritz report, Manafort is also connected to a series of puzzling real estate transactions in Manhattan and Brooklyn that experts and investigators say merit scrutiny.
For 3 decades, Trump friend Paul Manafort stayed mostly out of the news. He worked for Republican politicians and for clients who wanted something from those politicians, like Ferdinand Marcos, the Philippine dictator, and Viktor Yanukovych, the ousted president of Ukraine. But all of this was behind the scenes until about a year ago.
Trump has recently hired a veteran GOP strategist to be his new convention planner. Paul Manafort has worked for...
Our story begins a decade before that happened, when Manafort moved into Trump Tower. I made a visit to the tower a few weeks ago, just to have a look around. Not the public plaza where tourists go, but the residential section, with its own entrance tucked away on 56th Street. The wallpaper here really is gold. In 2006... Paul Manafort buys an apartment about 20 stories down from Trump's penthouse triplex, number 43G.
Also in 2006, according to a recent AP investigation, Manafort signs a $10 million contract with Oleg Deripaska, the Russian oligarch, specifically to burnish Vladimir Putin's image in the U.S. Manafort signs the contract with his business partner at the time, Rick Davis. Manafort's middle name is John, and Davis's middle name is Hannah. Why am I telling you this? The two names are combined into a shell company name. John Hanna LLC is registered in the state of Virginia. Then it purchases apartment 43G in Trump Tower for close to $3.7 million cash.
Fast forward to January 2015. Manafort, who's lived in the apartment all along, transfers the deed into his own name for $0. 3 months later, he borrows $3 million against the condo. And another 2 months after that, in the same building, Donald J. Trump rides an escalator down into history.
That is some group of people. Thousands.
It turns out Manafort's pattern of borrowing against New York City real estate repeats two more times after that. In each case, Manafort purchases the homes with shell companies with all cash, then transfers the properties into his own name for no money, then takes out hefty mortgages against them. $12 million in all.
So let's turn to property number two.
Fire escapes going up the front. Big high windows.
It's a fourth-floor loft apartment on Howard Street, just where Soho bleeds into Chinatown. Manafort buys it in 2012, yes, through an LLC, for all cash. Then, in 2016, Manafort transfers the apartment to his own name, again for no money. This is all happening as Manafort is taking an increasingly important role in an increasingly successful primary season.
Polls have now closed in Michigan, where Fox News can now project that Donald Trump will win the state's Republican presidential primary.
As all of this is going on, Manafort borrows another $3 million against the Soho apartment.
Transaction number three was flagged by Katya Kelly. She writes a blog about Carroll Gardens, Brooklyn called Pardon Me for Asking. One day she was walking down Union Street, this block of carefully maintained brownstones, and noticed a house that looked different from the others.
Rusty I-beams, cinder blocks stacked up in the little front garden, and it just looked unkempt. And got into a conversation with one of the residents, and she said, well, do you want a scoop?
Sure, Kelly said.
She said, guess who lives on our block?
You guessed it.
She said, Paul Manafort.
The records show Paul Manafort taking out nearly $7 million in loans on the brownstone.
According to Zillow, his estimate is a range between 4.5 and 5.0.
David Reese is professor of real estate law at Brooklyn College. He says by a common measurement of a home's value, the numbers don't add up.
First of all, you know, keeping in mind, mostly when you refinance a mortgage, you have to keep some equity in it, right? So that means like the property is really worth $8 million and you took out $7 million in mortgages. So I do think that that transaction raises yellow flags that are worth investigating.
Just for reference, Manafort begins his borrowing spree as Trump is launching his presidential campaign. Manafort keeps borrowing while he works as Trump's unpaid campaign manager. But his work for Trump is aborted after records surface showing he took $12 million in off-the-books payments from a Putin ally in Ukraine. Manafort quits the campaign, but he continues to borrow through the chaotic months to come.
Manafort records the last of his nearly $7 million in loans for the Brooklyn brownstone. That happens just days before Trump is inaugurated. The money comes from a bank run by a Trump fundraiser and advisor, Steve Calk. In an interview, Calk says he's confident the loan is, quote, over-collateralized, meaning more than covered by the home's value. And Manafort says, quote, my investments in real estate are personal and all reflect arm's-length transactions.
Buying properties with LLCs in New York City is not unusual, and neither is taking money out of real estate. But nine law enforcement and real estate experts we spoke with said Manafort's deals are hard to explain. This practice of buying expensive properties with all cash through LLCs in general is now under scrutiny by the Treasury Department's Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, or FinCEN. Last year, the head of FinCEN under Obama, Jennifer Shasky Calvary, told me that all cash purchases are common, they're often perfectly kosher, but because the money cannot easily be traced, it's also become a favored vehicle for money launderers.
Corrupt officials, organized crime figures, and other types of criminals who are taking the money that they've made through criminal activity and looking for a place to invest it, to hide it, and to enjoy it.
Calvary, who no longer works for the Treasury Department, didn't want to comment on Manafort's transactions. But the pattern of purchases was unusual enough that one federal agent with experience in complex financial investigations told us it looked suspicious. The agent asked for the documents to examine them further.
And the AP just reported the Treasury Department is investigating Manafort for his Ukraine dealings. It isn't known exactly what Treasury is looking for. And all over the news, the 2006 multimillion-dollar contract with Deripaska. He's the Russian oligarch Manafort began doing business with just as he bought into Trump Tower.
Now, we've just heard from Manafort in a written statement on this, saying, I worked with Oleg Deripaska, the Russian billionaire, almost a decade ago, representing him on business and personal matters in countries where he had investments.
Russia, Ukraine, Manafort, Trump Tower, Soho, Brooklyn. To Kathy Fleck, whose family once owned that brownstone in Carroll Gardens, it's all a mess. Fleck remembers her big Italian-American family gathering in that townhouse all the time.
Every holiday, every Sunday dinner of every week, we spent at 377 Union Street.
It was news to her that the house containing so many memories is now in a state of disrepair.
For me to see photos of it now, I'm crying, absolutely crying.
Fleck left Brooklyn. She lives mostly in Massachusetts now, on Cape Cod, where she owns a store called Curiouser and Curiouser. I'm Andrea Bernstein.
And I'm Ilya Meritz, WNYC News.
It's the Fabulous Geek Show.
All tied up, ready.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards.
Welcome to
Good evening,
everyone. Hey, Geek. How are you, man? JuiceTalk.com.
Veritas is satire spelled backwards. With a V for victory.
Savino Veritas in Wine the Truth. This is Artist D.
And Anne-Marie from Up All Night on 4 Culture Radio.
Have you got any wine, Anne-Marie?
I'm completely intoxicated.
We love to wine. We drink wine. We listen to Savino Veritas every week at JuiceTalk.com. Don't we love Tom?
Hi, Tom.
Hi, Tom.
How you doing?
We came across a real find this week, a previously censored episode of Mr. Rogers in 1983. You know, history repeats itself. In 1983, during the Reagan administration, President Ronald Reagan had his budget, as we are now having today with crazy Trump. And cutting beneficial things to the society for weapons. Now, a lot of people didn't like that. A lot of people did, just like today. One of the things Reagan planned to cut was public broadcasting. Well, in three episodes of Mr. Rogers in 1983, Mr. Rogers actually took to satire and addressed this problem right on the show to kids, as if he were addressing kids. So here's a wonderful, rare, censored episode of Mr. Rogers, the anti-bomb Mr. Rogers.
Corny. Well, a lot of company today.
I've come to place another order.
Another one of those secret parts?
A million of them.
A million of them?
Well, that's what the king wants.
Do you know how much that will cost?
10 million?
That's right.
Well, those are my orders.
Well, I'll get working on them.
Oh, does Southwood have theirs already?
Just finished them today.
I see. Incidentally, Corny, do you know how to make a bomb?
Oh, never made a bomb. I hope I never have to.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, I better get to work.
Me too.
Meow, meow, handyman, meow, meow.
Oh, hi, Henrietta.
Meow, meow, look, meow, meow, happy.
I'm not.
Meow, meow, trouble?
Well, I have to ask people to do things that I really don't even want to do myself.
Meow, meow, meow.
Oh, hi there, handy in hand.
Handy and Hen, I like that. Handy and Hen, Handy and Hen. If my name were Ken, we'd be Handy and Hen and Ken. Say, you two don't look very happy.
Handy meow meow, not happy meow.
What's wrong, Handy?
Well, I have to ask everybody to do something.
What is it?
Help them make some bombs.
What kind of bombs?
Secret kind.
Oh, they're probably full of toys, and when we drop them, everybody will get a treat.
No, I don't think they're that kind.
You don't mean war kind of bombs, do you?
I think so. Anyway, will you two help? King Friday told me to ask you.
Yum, your king, yum, your help.
Oh, I'm sure he will.
Yum, your good king. Yum, your help.
I will, too. King Friday wouldn't have us do something that was going to hurt anybody. He's always trying to keep people safe.
Yes, well, I'll tell him that you two will help, then.
And we shouldn't call them bombs, though. We should call them surprise treats or something like that. Bombs are scary things and hurting things.
Yeah. Well, I'll see you later, then.
Any time, Handy. Just let us know.
I will.
Meow, Handy.
Imagine.
Oh, the sound of money. Oh, the sound of the cash register. And a man angry. Just the person I'd like to see. Now, how did you know that I wanted to consult with you?
I really didn't know. I just came for my own reasons.
I can't hear a word you're saying. Will you help take off my FM or radio?
Oh, of course.
Oh, my. I love opera, don't you?
Oh, I do. Is that what you were singing?
Yes, I'm practically hoarse from singing so much. All in the laundry. Oh, the sound of money. Well, we know what we're going to do with our country's money, don't we?
Well, I guess we do.
Take a look at this catalog.
This one here?
Mm-hmm. You'll see.
Oh, yes, these are very nice-looking record machines.
But which one do you think would be best for the school? I'm on the committee to decide what we'll use the king's money for. He wanted to give something to the school, and I'm all for good music for the children.
Well, so am I, but I'm afraid that there's not going to be any money for anything like this.
Oh, yes, there is. King Friday just told me yesterday that there was plenty for whatever we decided. Harriet, Elizabeth, and I had a meeting about it last night, and
everything's changed, Lady Elaine.
What do you mean?
Well, King Friday has ordered 1 million parts from Corny.
Million parts?
And that's going to take all of the country's money.
Well, 1 million parts for what?
Well, to make bombs.
Bombs? Who's having a war?
Well, he thinks we may have to.
With whom?
With Southwood.
Southwood? Why, I've heard that those people are tamer than Daniel Tiger. They wouldn't hurt anybody.
Well, he thinks that they're building 1 million bombs, and he's going to want to build 1,000,001.
It's the craziest thing I've ever heard of.
Well, I'm just coming here to ask you if you will help build them.
1,000,001 bombs? Not on your life. We're going to buy a record player for the school.
Okay, well, I'm just warning you.
You tell the king I'm warning him. On second thought, I'd better tell him myself.
Okay, you're right.
I'm going this very second. Boomerang, toomerang, sumerang. Meow, 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 meow.
Yeah, I think these things are complicated.
What's going on here?
We're preparing to defend our country, Lady Elaine, and you may help.
I'll help, but it won't be the way you want me to help. What in the world are you trying to prove, Friday?
Southwood is building 1 million bombs, Fairchild, and we're going to be prepared.
How do you know they're doing that?
I have reason to think it's true. How about pitching in?
Not on your life. I've got to know a lot more about this situation before anybody gets my help.
Where do you think I ought to put this?
You'll find a place, Miss Pilificate. Everything has its place.
Wow, I see you're already hard at work.
Meow, 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 a little scary. Meow, meow, want to meow, meow, fight.
You won't have to fight, and I'll take care of you, Henrietta.
Telephone, Miss Pilificate.
Neighborhood of Make-Believe Castle Garden.
Probably.
Oh, yes, he is. He's working on the bomb right now.
I don't think you're supposed to say things like that, Miss P.
Oh, no. No, he's not working on a bomb. We're all together here in the garden just working on something. Would you like to speak with him? Just a moment.
King Friday the 13th here. Oh, yes, Westwood. Very good. Volunteers? Fine. See you then. Thank you. There. We'll be getting volunteers from Westwood, everyone. They're building up their defense. They've heard what we're doing.
I just can't believe this.
Stick with me, Fairchild. Your king will see you through.
What about the gift for the school?
After the war. We'll talk about that after the war.
I don't like this at all. Not at all.
I think that there is a big misunderstanding in the neighborhood of make-believe. Sometimes we have to ask some questions about what people mean, don't we? Lady Elaine seemed really angry. What do you think she'll do with her anger? I bet she'll find out some more about things so she can better understand what's going on. That's what I think. What do you do when you get angry? What do you do with the mad that you feel when you feel so mad you could bite? When the whole wide world seems oh so wrong and nothing you do...
Grandmother Sarah Bozzelli. She lost many friends 106 years ago at the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory Fire in New York City. Here's Robert Pinsky with a memorial poem, Shirt.
Shirt. The back, the yoke, the yardage, lapped seams. The nearly invisible stitches along the collar turned in a sweatshop by Koreans or Malaysians gossiping over tea and noodles on their break or talking money or politics while one fitted this arm piece with its overseam to the band of cuff I button at my wrist. The presser, the cutter, the wringer, the mangle, the needle, the union, the treadle, the bobbin, the code. The infamous blaze at the Triangle Factory in 1911. 146 died in the flames on the ninth floor. No hydrants, no fire escapes. The witness in a building across the street who watched how a young man helped a girl to step up to the windowsill, then held her out away from the masonry wall and let her drop. And then another, as if he were helping them up to enter a streetcar, and not eternity. A third, before he dropped her, put her arms around his neck and kissed him. Then he held her into space and dropped her. Almost at once, he stepped to the sill himself. His jacket flared and fluttered up from his shirt as he came down, air filling up the legs of his gray trousers. Like Hart Crane's bedlamite, shrill shirt ballooning. Wonderful how the pattern matches perfectly across the placket and over the twin bar-tacked corners of both pockets like a strict rhyme or a major chord. Prints, plaids, Checks, Houndstooth, Tattersall, Madras. The clan tartans invented by mill owners inspired by the hoax of Ossian to control their savage Scottish workers tamed by a fabricated heraldry. McGregor, Bailey, McMartin. The kilt devised for workers to wear among the dusty clattering looms. Weavers, carters, spinners. The loader, the docker, the navvy, the planter, the picker, the sorter sweating at her machine in a litter of cotton as slaves in calico head rags sweated in fields. George Herbert, your descendant is a black lady in South Carolina. Her name is Irma, and she inspected my shirt. Its color and fit and feel and its clean smell have satisfied both her and me. We have culled its cost and quality down to the buttons of simulated bone, the button holes, the sizing, the facing, the characters printed in black on neckband and tail, the shape, the label, the labor, the color, the shade, the shirt.
Meeting is adjourned. Oh, I am sorry, sir. I didn't mean to overstep my bounds. You say that.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
No, you say that, Governor.
What?
Meeting is adjourned.
It is?
The end.
By George, he's got it. It is the end.
No, that'll be all. Just be sure to lock the door behind you on your way out. Good night.